CNBC's Big January continues with the JPM Healthcare Conference, the Amex Golf Tournament, Inauguration Day, and the World Economic Forum in Davos. Get ahead of the game. Listen to CNBC on the Odyssey app.
Yes. We got some good petties for this pettycast. I think you're going to enjoy this. Some good audio here. We do it every Tuesday. We highlight other people's pettiness. We highlight our own pettiness. We encourage you to text in things you're petty about, 713-572-4610.
You know what we should do? Oh, never mind. I was going to say pay homage to Tom Petty, who died this year, but he died 8 years ago.
Oh,
so there we go.
Oh, he's still
paying. For some
reason,
I felt like Tom Petty died this year. I always get him confused with O.J. Simpson. I guess that's the thing.
A lot of
people
do.
So R.I.P. O.J. Simpson.
Yeah. O.J. Simpson and Tom Petty.
Or Tom Petty, whichever one it was.
Either one. Yeah. I totally get them mixed up. Yep. So I'm actually going to start, Seth, with one of my own petties here. And it's with our quarterback. It's with C.J. Stroud, who I love. He's the quarterback of the future here. He's awesome. Great dude. Great teammate. I don't need CJ. This video has resurfaced over the last several weeks.
Oh, yeah.
CJ Stroud on the sofa there with the Million Dollars Worth of Game podcast. He and Tank were on it.
Yeah.
And CJ listed his top five quarterbacks coming off of 2023, and here was the list.
Oh, no, I'm tripping. Let me go.
I'm tripping.
So, look, final five. I know what I'm doing, dog. Mahomes, Lamar, myself, Dak.
Joey B.
He didn't really play last year.
Off of last year.
And then Hurts.
Dak,
that boy. Y'all not going to say that because he ain't won the big one.
Byron, we don't need any more of this. They're going to argue over Dak for like 30 seconds.
Bills fans, I'm guessing, have been putting that up a lot. Josh Allen not in the top five there?
I didn't hear Josh Allen
Dak
in
above,
there.
Yeah. Put Dak above Josh Allen. You know what? I've seen that referenced a bunch, and in my mind, I was just kind of hoping. Like, I didn't really think hard about it. I was like, it wasn't that bad. Yeah, no, it was just simple as that. He just flat out put him. The recommendation to young athletes is always that, A, whenever anybody asks you a power ranking question, just don't answer it at all. But, B, if you do answer it, say, like, all right, well, I'm not going to put myself, like, other than me, and then that's the way you get around it. And then you don't answer any specifics about that. You don't have to answer the power ranking questions. Never answer a power ranking question.
Okay, and if you're listening out there and you're taking Seth's advice, don't. Don't take Seth's advice. Power rank things every chance you get.
Yeah.
Yes. Content.
What's more cringy right this moment? That, which was done in fun, or the kind of backhanded pep talk that he gave to Caleb Williams early in the season?
I would say the pep talk he gave to Caleb Williams.
Caleb Williams had gone on to be really, really good, it would feel worse, but it did not age well.
No, it did. Well, and it was a big topic of conversation literally the day after it happened. This top five that he did on this podcast, we played it last year, and I don't remember you or me or a ton of people being cringy at all about it at the time.
Right. The thing with CJ at the beginning of the year compared to where you stand now is, man, when you go back and listen to that and him giving the advice to Caleb Williams, it sounds like a seasoned veteran who, you know, certainly wasn't going to go through a sophomore slump.
Right.
And then he had the classic sophomore slump. Now, you can debate about the reasons for it and everything else, but this will be regarded as a huge sophomore slump because he's just not nearly had the same performance as he did last
year. Yeah, I mean, you're absolutely right. Now, he has a chance in the playoffs here to, you know, if they win a road game in the playoffs and get to the AFC title, that can erase in a lot of people's minds, especially if he's the catalyst for it and it's not winning the turnover battle by four or something like that. He's got an opportunity here. And this is where I'll give credit to CJ during the pettycast. I'm going to do this quick. I do think he's handled this year with a lot of maturity. I don't think he's been, you know, like attitude wise, I think it seems like he's been good, at least everything we see outwardly. But don't do these podcasts in the offseason, CJ, where you're listening. You're right, Seth. Like, CJ specifically, don't do this stuff. All you other
I would
athletes,
rather he go
do.
On an ayahuasca journey.
I would, too.
Than, you know, be on any podcast.
All right, Tom Brady. Tom Brady had a chance to watch a Tom Brady commentated game this weekend because the Texans weren't playing. There are parts of Tom Brady during these broadcasts that are really, really good. the opening to this particular broadcast was not Brady's finest moment. After being asked by Kevin Burkhardt, you know, to kind of break down the two teams real quick, you know, the stand-up they do right there, where it's like one of the few shots you get of the announcers as they're, you know, laying out the game for you before kickoff, spoke in vague generalities about the Vikings. I'm like, all right, well, that wasn't, I'm not getting a whole lot off of this. And then he gave this bit of analysis about the Green Bay Packers.
Respond today. Yeah, it's a big road challenge. They've got four losses here, Green Bay does. Two of them to the Lions, they're a good team. The Eagles, they lost to them, they're a good team. And they lost to the, who'd they lose to the other one? Anyway, they've got a big opportunity today to go on the road and really a litmus test for what they're going to face in 2 weeks. Can't wait to watch.
Yeah, yeah. The other team they lost to was the team that they're playing that very game against, is the Minnesota Vikings.
I will not be the one to be petty about anybody slipping on a name whatsoever. I will say, though, that given Tom Brady's reputation for preparedness, the opening comments are usually at least somewhat prepared. You've got bullet points or something. So I'll be petty in that, like, that's not the Tom Brady that I was led to believe would never show up unprepared for an opening drive. So that's the part. Yes. I can't skewer him for screwing up a name or not remembering something, but that's not the Tom Brady level of preparedness that I've come to love.
$37 million he makes. You got to know which four teams they lost to if you're going to bring that up as a point.
I wonder if he's trying to be looser, and maybe part of that is that, okay, all right, I'm just going to kind of go off the cuff more, which is advice I would give him. And then he would come back to the producer's booth and scream at me. You see that? You want me to go out there with no notes, you son of a bitch?
Yeah.
Yeah.
LFG. Let's go.
Throws down a random tablet somewhere.
Yes.
He just grabs a tablet out of somebody's hand and throws it down.
Some intern.
Give me a tablet to throw. I need everybody to see how angry I am.
Some intern's personal iPad. I'll buy you a new one, kid.
Pictures are on there.
Exactly. They're in the cloud. Don't worry about it. Shannon Sharp got big mad at Kirk Herbstreit this past week. So here's Kirk Herbstreit with Chris Fowler. Kind of takes a shot at First Take here. This is during the Ohio State-Tennessee game in the opening round of the college football playoff.
God forbid they lose to Oregon. They want to fire him again.
But that's not reality. I mean, that's the thing. When you hear pundits on this network and other places talk about that with certainty, it's nonsense, frankly. I mean, the public doesn't pull the trigger and get rid of the coach.
No.
The administrators do, and they're behind them.
Yeah. First Take tried to fire him. They thought he was done. So I'll be excited to see what they talk about on Monday after this performance. They had him out. They're trying to find replacements.
Okay.
Here he is. He's still got his hat on. He's still coaching.
Yeah, good enough. Ryan Day is who they're talking about there, the Ohio State head coach. Who, you know, and we should point out Herbstreit, an Ohio State Buckeye, who's probably pretty plugged in up at Ohio State.
Yeah.
Almost kind of scoffing at First Take a little. I think that's at least how Shannon Sharp took it. Here was Shannon Sharp a day later on First Take.
Even though I'm going to let it slide. I'm going to be a good teammate. I'm going to let it slide. Everybody's at ESPN. Because had you not taken the route you taken, I would have lit their ass up. But I'm going to let it slide. You know what, guys? Congratulations, Ohio State. You won the game. But, hey, if we're going to be on the same team, if we're going to work for the same network, don't do that. Kurt, Chris Fowler, I promise you, if you ever mention anything, any platform that I'm on again and talking about I wonder what they're going to say in negativity, I promise you, ESPN ain't got enough bosses to keep me off y'all for what I'm going to say. So I'm going to let y'all slide today. I'm going to turn it over to D.O. before I get myself in trouble. But don't play with me. Go ahead, D.O.
Okay, we're good. D.O. is Dan Orlovsky there.
I saw a lot of people say, like, okay, I don't know why Shannon Sharp got so offended. Right. It was almost the lack of direct confrontation. It was the way they were kind of... They were speaking very dismissively about First Take and basically saying you shouldn't take them seriously, but then also made worse by, I honestly feel like Shannon Sharp would have been less offended if they had said, like, Shannon's wrong about this, blah, 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 but they wouldn't even do the respect of saying their names. I could see why Shannon got upset, and then especially because it's somebody on your own network, but I do wonder whether ESPN... You know, going back to Pat McAfee calling out the ESPN execs and everything, yeah. I wonder if they like a little bit of the WWE side of this, where it's more, it's clicks, it's views, it's 100%. All of that, if you can get that kind of drama going.
I wonder.
I don't know if it's even something that, like, ESPN would have directed them to do, but yeah. they might be like, oh, this will be an interesting development to monitor.
When I listen to this, I'm like, okay, what exactly is Shannon, like, if there is a next time, and they do this again, Herb Street and Fowler, like, what is the threat here? Is he just going to light them up verbally? Like, is he going to go beat them up? Like, what? I'm just wondering, like, what's the actual threat going on here?
It felt, yeah, exactly. Well, or just, I think for Shannon, in his mind, it would be he would launch an all-out assault against them on social media and try to make their, I mean, that's violence these days, is that he would make it as miserable as possible. The point where Herb Street's getting booed and just screamed at everywhere he goes on College Game Day.
Yep.
And I feel like Shannon could pull it off.
Yeah. Oh yeah, for sure. No, Shannon Sharp has the capacity to be a WWE performer when it comes to the verbal part of it.
I'll tell you what, it honestly kind of reminded me a little bit of just like different people have different communication styles, and sometimes it's culturally based, and there's an element there of where Herb Street didn't feel like he was really keeping it real. He was like trying to throw shade, you know, instead of just coming right out with it.
He was passive-aggressive.
Trying to be clever about it versus like somebody in the locker room is going to be like, no, say what you mean to say.
Right. Kirk Herbstreit.
Come on, be a man about it.
Herbstreit was passive-aggressive. Shannon was threatening to be aggressive-aggressive.
Yeah. Sometimes the guys that grow up in more of like a type of environment, when they're confronted full force, they're like, hey, your country club insults don't fly here.
Yeah.
It's always interesting.
That's what I was hearing. Yep. Pettycast, Charles Barkley does not like the city of San Francisco.
Because even with the Warriors, and I hate the Warriors fans in San Francisco, but they were amazing in Oakland.
Yes.
They were tremendous. Even when they were good with Chris Mullin and the Hardaway and Mitch Richmond, they were terrific. Yeah, they were great. And when the Warriors weren't any good. And when they were in Oakland, they were fantastic. Now, I hate them in San Francisco because that's the armpit of America. But there's certain cities.
The armpit of America, San Francisco.
Yes, it is.
No,
yes,
what are you talking about?
Yeah, the armpit
of
America.
Close. That's not even
what a perfect time to remind you that TNT has the All-Star game.
I'll take
in
Sacramento.
San Francisco.
Sacramento over San Francisco.
San Francisco.
I will take Sacramento, California.
Leeds, Alabama.
No, San Francisco is the armpit of America.
You'll get to say hi at the All-Star game.
It's not even close.
Well, let me get all my artillery ready. Can't walk around there.
Charles is the best.
Can't walk around. Well, yeah, because of the people. I guess, yeah, he's trying to displace San Antonio. He probably likes going to San Antonio, and he's tired of people being angry at him there. I will say this about San Francisco. San Francisco has some of the most little pockets of just delightful, beautiful places to be. Of all the Super Bowls that we've gone to, including New Orleans,
yes,
the only place I've had to literally dodge poop on the sidewalk, like as a, I had to like take a serpentine route to the stadium every day on my walk, was San Francisco. There's like literal poop everywhere, not Great Dane poop.
No,
it just it's
there was people poop. I was on that trip too. That was in I think 2015 season. Yeah. I think is when that was. And if you remember, we stayed at a hotel where if you wanted to not take the serpentine route, as you call it. You just go down this alleyway. This alleyway went straight to the Convocation Center where Radio Row was. The problem was it was almost like playing a video game where the idea was to step over as many homeless people as you possibly could. If you were allowed to score points based on the number of homeless people you stepped over, you scored major points walking down that alleyway because there were a ton of them.
I was with an acquaintance of mine from another station in another city, but who... you know, this was before, I don't think it was, I think medical marijuana was legal in California at that point, but not recreational. For the first and only time in my life, I was part of somebody buying drugs from a stranger on the street. And I'm amazed that he pulled it off because I could not have looked more like a rookie cop who was nervous as hell. Now, I was nervous because I was like, hey, what the hell's going on here, man? What are you doing? And so I looked nervous and scared, but with my fresh, clean shave and my physique, I can't believe that That must have been the dumbest drug dealer on earth. Obviously, I was a cop. There's no way he shouldn't have thought I was a cop.
Oh, my God.
I was so nervous. Oh. I looked like I was definitely a rookie cop. And I was paranoid about it for like 2 days. I was like, what if there's security footage?
you know, the Super Bowl is coming back to San Francisco in the
next
couple
of years. And Iowa can't even buy drugs on the street unless I go to the hard stuff.
That's right. That's right.
Kids, I didn't smoke any of the marijuana. I didn't know what I was getting myself into. It was like an after school special, Sean.
Yeah.
And in the after school special, I would have ended up getting taken to juvie, and it would have been a cautionary tale about choosing who you consort with.
Yes.
That other person's doing quite well, by the way, right?
Are they? Are they? Yeah.
They were already doing quite well, and now they're doing astoundingly well.
Do you remember the after-school special that had Scott Baio in it? I think it was called, like, Stoned or something like that.
Yeah.
It made it out like he smoked weed in junior high, and it made it seem like he was shooting heroin in the hallways at school. You know what I mean? Like, he was the worst kid ever because he was smoking weed, which back in 1981 or whenever it came out, that was sort of the vibe back then. A lot different now. Text message, CJ's question next year will be rank the top 15 quarterbacks, not the top 5. Success obviously went to his head.
Success, went to his head.
I
thought he said wins you his head.
No.
Maybe kind of the same thing. Oh, yeah, his head was deviant. It's a constant battle, man.
Yeah.
There's nothing harder than handling success and adulation. I think people thought that Nick Saban all those years was exaggerating when he called it rat poison, when I think in Nick Saban's mind, no, especially in the college age, but really at any age, it's rat poison. It will kill you. It will kill your hopes and expectations and everything else because you lose an edge if you feed into it too much.
That'll be the theme of training camp next year. I was thinking about that in the last couple days. Like, okay, what? Because we remember just how, like, over-the-top jubilant training camp was this year. All these new guys. Diggs is here and Danielle Hunter, Joe Mixon, man, this is it, man. This is a new the Texans are going farther than they've ever gone before because of this group out here on the field. And now the feeling is like they'll be lucky to go as far as they went before. And I think that's going to be the theme in training camp next year is like, okay, this needs to be, we can't, even if they make some big acquisitions, which they probably do need to make a couple if they're going to get to where they want to go. I still think there's going to be a lot of hope, and I think there's going to be a lot of people like there were last year. But I do think that there will be a tone with the team that, like, players, coaches, everybody, like, tamp it back a little bit, you know, compared to last
year. Yeah, and maybe that's the kind of things like that happen with your own kids. There's some lessons that they have to learn on their own. And the guys who are your really young players, but who are also the leaders of your team, need to learn that lesson. Not that they would have preferred this. It worked out this way, but I think that's naturally going to happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think I do think CJ makes a conscious effort to try to stay humble. It's just that there's some things that Coffin used to drill this into our heads, that it did not matter who you were, you always have to have somebody that's a truth teller for you, and that you always have to be on guard for any kind of complacency. That's why Coughlin was the better you were with Coughlin, the more miserable it was.
Because he
was just, he did not, man, if you had a big victory, it was going to be a miserable week of practice.
Yeah.
Because he did not want you feeling too good about yourself.
Yep. I don't mind that style at all. All right, Payne and Pendergast with you. All right, it's New Year's Eve, last day of the year. Biggest Houston sports story of 2024. I've got mine. Textures in. Seth, I'm curious what you think. I've got six listed here. I'm curious what you think of my list of the six biggest stories, Houston sports stories of 2024. We'll do that coming up next. All right, Tane and Pendergast with you. Biggest sports.
During the break, I was bringing up like various personal drama of Sean's. I just wanted to get him in a miserable state of mind to make 2025 a new year.
Okay, I feel fine.
That's why I was doing that.
All the things you brought up, I've calloused to now, so I'm good.
Oh,
man. Yeah,
you're emotionally dead inside. That's a sweet spot.
That's a
sweet spot.
You know it.
Well, I feel real feelings when there's chemicals available. Yeah,
got that right, man. The biggest sports story of 2024, Houston sports story in 2024. I didn't sit down somewhere and mull over this for 3 hours. I came up
with
a
cocktail napkin.
It's a cocktail napkin list, man. Yeah, so I jotted down six, and I'm open to others on the text page if you want to send it in. 713-572-4610. I'll count down my six, okay? Number six, the Rockets' resurgence under Ime Udoka. And that's that may end up higher up the list the further we go, but for 2024, we're only a couple months into it, you know?
Well, and I guess when I think of either stories, I kind of think of it almost as synonymous with moments or brief periods in time, where that's been a nice, steady burn.
Yeah.
So it's maybe one of the best overall stories, but I don't think of it as like, oh, the big moment or the big, because it's been a gradual process over the course of a year and a half.
Yep, no doubt. So that's number six for me. Number five, Andre Johnson going into the Hall of Fame, which was widely celebrated as the greatest singular accomplishment for the Texans as a franchise.
Yeah.
Andre going into it got celebrated without the parade and whatnot. Like it was the most celebrated thing this franchise has ever had happen. Outside of a football game, you know, outside
and I
of a
guess,
win.
Yeah, and that's another one that's, you know, it happens over the course of multiple months, so it doesn't necessarily feel like as like, oh, that's the big story.
No,
so
you're
it's
right.
A really good story.
Yeah.
It's maybe one of my favorite stories, but is it the big, big story?
Is it the big, big story? Well, and you're right, and it's several pieces, too, because the induction ceremony, you know, his speech, it was awesome. Like, the whole thing was great. Number four, the Azeez Alshire suspension. Was a huge story. Sometimes my gauge on stuff like this, Seth, is how much are they talking about this stuff on the national shows?
Yeah.
Azeez Alshire's suspension dominated the airwaves, not just here in Houston, but the national TV debate shows for 2 or 3 days.
It was the sports version of Hurricane Harvey.
Yes.
It was, it's a big enough storm that this is on the nightly news nationally.
Go.
Likewise with Azeez Alshire, there was crossover there. It was a crossover hit.
What?
My big barometer is whether my mom texts or emails me about it.
There you go.
And she did. She wanted to have my mom who... yesterday informed my brother that that Peyton and Eli have a nephew who's a college football player. So
she let him know that.
So if she's if she's talking about sports to either of us, it's a big story. So she definitely saw something on like the Today Show or something about Arch Manning.
About Arch Manning, that's great. Hey, did you guys know? Number three.
And she asked me about Azeez.
Okay, good. Well, there's your litmus test. Number three. And this is, again, this isn't a singular moment, but this is just, you know, stories. You know, for me, how I define them is it can be something that's overarching. Bobby Slowik under fire. That's been a topic literally all season long. That's been the story with the Texans has been the regression of the offense. Not winning another division.
Yeah.
Not starting the year off 6-2. The in-season story has been Bobby Slowik.
It's been the in-season story. Now, I might be a little bit of a hypocrite here. I feel like that's also been a slow burn. There was questions, but over the course of the season, it's gone from, okay, he's promising, but he's got to be able to show that he can establish a run game. And then as everything is, and the offense has gotten worse and worse and worse as the season's gone along, that I'll bend my own rule that I made up 3 minutes ago and say that, it feels poignant enough.
Yes.
It feels like a big enough deal that's up there.
That's number three for me. Number two, the Astros ALCS streak ending at seven straight ALCSs was... Sad, but a big story, yeah.
Yeah, and I guess, I'm really being a fraud now. Or maybe it's just evidence that those are bigger stories. Because that's been, it feels like that overall story leads to something that every 2 or 3 weeks you're like, oh, Astros haven't been in this position before.
Yes.
Astros haven't been in this position before.
Yeah.
And then you've got Altuve just coming out and saying, like, demanding that they re-sign Bregman.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's been a lot of... I feel like that's provided enough poignant moments that's way up there.
I thought about the Astros 7-19 start, putting that there. But you're right. Like, it's the ALCS, the ALCS streak ending, and ending is just... popcorn fart as it possibly could, getting swept at home by the Detroit Tigers, who weren't even in the playoff mix until the last couple weeks of the season. I thought that was kind of 2024 Astros microcosm right there, you know?
I'm trying to figure out what your number one is going to be now.
Okay.
Oh, I know what it is. Okay.
You want to guess?
It's got to be the Diggs trade.
It's the Diggs trade.
Especially by my... I'm going to go back to the criteria that I had previously established 6 minutes ago.
Yeah.
As far as poignancy...
Yes.
That was one where... They made that trade, and unanimously, before we found out all the details of the trade, people thought, oh, they are not messing around.
Right.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
Yep.
Even whether you loved it or hated it, that was an indication that, oh, man, they are seizing the moment, and they are going after it. And then that created more and more. Like, that was something to monitor the whole. It was the talk of all summer long and on into training camp. Yeah, that's it. That's the big one. Good job, Sean.
Thanks, man. I appreciate that. Yeah.
Based on my haphazard, rapidly shifting criteria.
It's okay.
I would say that, yes, you nailed it.
It's our show. We can do whatever we want. I would say, you know, I talked about, like, you know, how big a story was it nationally. That factors into how big a local story it is. The Diggs trade was huge. You're absolutely right. It shifted the entire rundown on the TV shows that are on here in the studio, you know, with the breaking news. I would say one of the other criteria, if a fellow host comes in and interrupts the show to tell you about a breaking news, then it's pretty damn big, you know?
Is that how it happened?
Yeah, it was. Well, Lopez poked his head in and did the old, like, pointing it.
Yeah.
His phone thing, and I looked down. And so then I said, Lopez, come on in, sit down, let's chat.
It's weird, boy. I'll tell you what, my new criteria that I'm using in terms of biggest Texans stories of all time.
Yeah.
The DeAndre Hopkins trade must be way above the Diggs trade, because I remember exactly where I was when I learned about the DeAndre Hopkins trade.
Yep.
Whereas with the, I have no memory of Lopez or any of that. Oh, wait, no, now I do. But yeah, I couldn't bring it right up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was quite a toss that day between the two.
Yeah, because that's part of the, you guys get all the breaking news, and this is the biggest breaking news that's been. Yeah,
yeah,
you're right.
Yeah,
you're right.
Yeah, that was
because we had, the very abrupt departure.
Yeah.
I remember it now.
Yep, okay. Yeah. Like it was yesterday.
Yeah.
Payne and Pendergast with you. So, yeah, what's your text in? 713-572-4610. How did I do on my list? My top six: Rockets resurgence, number six. Andre Johnson going into the Hall of Fame, number five. Azeez Alshire suspension 4, Bobby Slowick under fire 3, Astros ALCS streak over 2, Stephon Diggs trade number 1. Man, that Diggs trade was huge. And that, boy, it was so huge that day, and for it to end the way that it did with him just tearing his ACL on this benign non-contact play in week 8 in the third quarter against the Colts was just, oh.
That's a story that's going to go down in not the annals of history, but the annals of history.
It will, yeah.
That's,
Yeah.
It's not as fond
ends.
Of memory as I thought it was going to be.
One end. People texting in, fire Bobby or run it back one more year. What about the Kyle Tucker trade? Someone's asking. Okay, where does the Kyle Tucker trade crack that top six for
boy.
You?
Oh, man. I wonder, boy, that's really, boy, it should have been in the top six.
Yeah. Probably so.
I would, that's, I guess by that point, it just felt like there was enough news that leaked out that it wasn't as big a, the Diggs trade was a complete surprise. There hadn't been rumors about it or anything. The Kyle Tucker trade was all part of, I guess, your number two, the Astros ALCS streak being over.
Yeah.
The Kyle Tucker trade was all a big part of that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Maybe we should have put, instead of Astros ALCS streak over, the number two story should have been the Kyle Tucker trade.
I would say, without knowing which one to move out of there, I would say, it feels like a top six story.
If I had to take one thing that wraps up all of that, it would be the Kyle Tucker trade.
Yep. That it's
It wasn't that you let him walk in free agency next year. It's like, all right, the writing's on the wall. Let's pull the Band-Aid off.
You're doing things that rebuilding teams do.
Good job, listener.
Yep, that's good. Yeah. Keep sending them in. 713-572-4610. All right. Dana Holgorsen, who's now the OC at Nebraska, story came out in the Chronicle. This is how you spend your time when you get an eight-figure buyout from your employer.
This is going to be our advice to everybody who's in that position.
Yes.
Coming up next. If you're in position to get an eight-figure buyout, this is the segment for you.
This is how you handle it. Yes. If you're getting $14.8 million bucks from your employer to go away, Do it the way Dana Holgorsen did it. We will tell you exactly what that entails next. Hey, for those of you out there who are planning on getting a $14.8 million buyout from your employer, Dana Holgorsen, I think, has given the blueprint on how to go ahead and spend that money. If you look in the Chronicle, there's an article that outlines all the places that Dana Holgorsen went with his $14.8 million that he got. And this is a list, man. Like, this is how you do it. Places Dana Holgorsen went. Now, he's the OC at Nebraska now. He's signed a two-year deal there, $1.2 million a year. So Houston is off the hook for $2.4 million of the buyout that he is getting. He's getting in chunks here. He didn't get one big cardboard Publishers Clearinghouse check.
Oh, that sucks.
Yeah, time value of money and everything. But it seems like he got enough to do a lot of really cool stuff. How about this for the list? Places he went. This is just in the last year, because he just got fired, right? Like, at the end of life. Like, this is Willie Fritz's first year. Like, it's been less than a year. London.
Okay, London, good. He'd have a good time in London. It probably took him a little while to get over the. What, you want to go down through all of them? Go ahead.
Well, no. Do you tell me. You want to stop on each of these? London.
No, go ahead.
London.
It's a long list.
Yeah. London, Bordeaux, Monaco, French Riviera, Paris. That feels like one trip right there. Like all the Europe stuff right there. Napa, Malibu, Salt Lake City, Aspen. Atlantis, which I'm assuming is the big resort in the Bahamas that we're talking about here. Bahamar, Jamaica, Cancun. Okay, this is the fun part. Puerto Vallarta, Tulum, and Cabo.
Where's Bahamar? Is that in the Caribbean
That's a good
somewhere?
Question. I'm not totally sure.
But he definitely, it looks, you know what, when I had seen the original list, I was like, man, that's a lot of trips. But you're right, that's probably in three big trips where he was just kind of, like most recently island hopping and what have you. He did a European trip earlier in the year. It's so still an impressive list of destinations. It looks like he went on three cruises where you stopped in each one of these ports.
Yes. I'm trying to get a Wikipedia on Bahamar here, and I'm having a hard time. It may not exist anymore. Maybe it got blown out of the water. It didn't survive. Two things that didn't survive: Dana Holgorsen, U of H football, and Bahamar.
It's a very good chance that you and I missed out on a huge current event, like a hurricane wiping out an entire island nation.
Okay.
It would not surprise me that I missed that in the news.
Bahamar is a 1,000-acre resort complex on the island of New Providence in the Bahamas.
Oh, okay.
So it's not. Yeah, it's a Bahamian resort, like the Atlantis. The Atlantis is a big resort in the Bahamas as well. So he went resort hopping in the Bahamas. What a baller move, man. And they got a TPC golf course there, designed by Jack Nicklaus.
Is he a big golfer?
He's friends with Granado. I almost think that's a prerequisite to be in Granado's inner circle, is that you've got to play golf. So I would assume that he's a guy, and he's a former athlete too, you know, like played football back in the day. So probably so. If you had the 14.8 milli, how close would your list look to Dana's, where he's got the European trip nailed down?
I think,
he's got the domestic stuff with the California coast, along with what looks like a couple of skiing trips to Utah and Aspen, and then he's got all that island living going on.
I think mine these days is skewing more towards, if I had unlimited time and just whatever, I want to hit Asia. I would be
really?
Hitting various parts of Asia, I think.
Oh,
yeah,
man.
Just because it's as different culture in a lot of places than I've experienced before. I know how the Euros are wired. I've been to the islands enough. I need to get me some Asia. Damn it.
Dude, you and I are the opposite. I don't know that I'd leave the country. I'm not a huge world traveler, man. Well, I'd leave the country because I like all these Mexican places that he went and all the, you know, the island stuff, the Bahamas and things like that. I have, much to Amy's chagrin, I have very little desire to go to Europe or any, you know, to take a
What about to your motherland? You don't want to go back to Ireland?
Ireland would be a good one.
Impress all of the native Irish people that, like, hey, yeah. I'm Irish-American.
Right, yeah.
To which the Irish people are like, you know, you're just another strange white dude. Get out of my face.
Right, right, right.
I've got a boatload of strange Irish people around here. I don't need one whose family fled when the going was tough back in the day.
I've got a T-shirt on that says "I Heart Ireland" on it. Like you get it,
yeah.
And I'm like, "Hey, the prodigal son has returned." Yeah, they're like,
"They're my favorite stories of like people that go over there thinking that somehow they're going to be welcomed with open arms." Like, no, you're just like, "Yeah, no." I was like, "It'd be like somebody coming up to you in Connecticut when you're at your home, somebody coming in and being into a bar and being like." My grandparents lived here. They're a long time ago. Yeah, all right. I still live here. What?
I'll tell you who some of the nicest people are that I've come across in this job. The guys who do the Irish NFL show. Have you ever been on their show before? It's
a long time ago. Yeah,
really nice guys, man. And you're right, though. They're unimpressed when I talk about visiting my homeland and I bring it up on there. Now that you mention it, they're not... They have offered if I come there, like, yeah, give us a call. We'll go get a pint with you or something like that. I'm like, well, I need to be much more celebrated than just a pint when I come home.
There's a lot of things, too, as far as, they don't care. They just, it has zero meaning to them.
Yeah.
Which is a shock sometimes.
Yeah. You know what I would do? I would, because I'd have a lot of time on my hands, so I could sit down and plan this. And I've always wanted to do this, and maybe in retirement someday I'll do it. But you see people do it every year. They do, like, the 30 ballpark trip. Like you're gone for like 2 months, and I think it would be so fun like putting that trip together like a puzzle almost, you know, of putting that trip together, arranging all the transportation, tickets, and things like that. The Astros had somebody at a game this year that was doing that, like an older couple, retired couple who were big baseball fans. Because I could do that. Amy would love doing that because she loves going to ballparks and things like that. So
well, you know what, Brandy and I have started in on hardcore. Planning on doing this someday in the future, but not actually doing anything about it. I would like to hike the Appalachian Trail.
Ooh.
I'd like to, and that takes some time. But just like Dana's trip there, I think you got to figure out where you got to break it up with some alcohol at some point. Because man, from when I was a kid, that was always a dream of mine to hike the entire Appalachian Trail.
Yeah,
but it takes a few months.
Right. Is there anything on Dana's list that screams out, like, actual physical exertion? I guess maybe the skiing, if he went skiing in Aspen or Salt Lake City.
Yeah.
The rest of this just screams out drinking, golf, gambling. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, none of the other ones. Those other ones are classic tourist destinations.
Yes.
And, I mean, like, even... Yeah, even on the European vacation, Bordeaux. So, no, this was not a high adventure, like outdoorsy type of vacation.
No,
I don't think he was sleeping on the ground at any point.
No, it's what I would expect from Dana Holgorsen, and I say that with fondness in my heart. Yeah.
If he was sleeping on the ground, it wasn't because he was camping. It was
no, it's the ground. Are we calling hotel room floors the ground now? Is that
what we're somewhere, wherever, a random place. Yeah.
Yes. I fell asleep on the ground. That's a beach. Okay.
You passed out on the beach.
On the beach, Cyfair Frank says, Dubai, conspicuous by its absence on Dana's $14.8 million boondoggle. Yeah, I might have expected Dubai on there, possibly. Yeah.
Why would it be? I figured there's some news story that I don't know about.
No.
Like, I don't know. I don't know why it's conspicuous that Dubai's not on there.
Yeah,
but I don't know.
I just think.
Was there a recruiting scandal where they had Dubai? Was Dubai trying to buy? Was United Arab Emirates trying to buy the University of Houston football program?
Maybe, possibly. That overseas money will get into some college football programs. Someone said, "Can you read the list again?" I'm going to do this fast. This is the list of places Dana Holgorsen went with his $14 million buyout. London, Bordeaux, Monaco, French Riviera, Paris. That's the Euro trip. Napa, Malibu, Salt Lake City, Aspen. That's the domestic trip. Atlantis, Bahamar, two Bahama resorts. Jamaica, Cancun, Puerto Vallarta, Tulum, Cabo San Lucas. So that's the island / Mexico portion of his run. It's a lot of travel, man.
One of our listeners accused us of being Astros Kool-Aid drinkers because we didn't have the Kyle Tucker trade itself as one of the biggest stories.
Right.
Which I thought was interesting because, That's some really, really bad listening there. If we were Kool-Aid drinkers, we'd be like, yeah, finally they traded away Kyle Tucker. Yeah. Like, no, neither one of us think it's an awesome thing that they had to trade away Kyle Tucker. It was, there were certain reasons that we didn't have it on the top list, but it wasn't like we were like, yeah, who cares? We don't need him anyway.
Yeah, we
put your listening ears on, damn it. It's true that you got one more day to get your life right before 2025 starts, and now you're just being some sod that can't even listen or see past his own damn bias. I'm miserable about the Astros right now.
The text that Seth is talking about, this is in the aftermath of us doing the top Houston sports stories in the previous segment. Why are we all so meh about Tucker being traded? LOL, hashtag Astros Kool-Aid. That's the text.
Yeah. Call me a Kool-Aid drinker.
I have a theory. If you think we're being meh, and I think what the texter is saying is like, we should be making a bigger deal out of this. Like, this is, oh my God, the Astros, like this, the sky is falling, this and that. I think one of the maybe the biggest reason why everybody is I think there's two reasons why people are mad. One, I think there's some people that feel like the Astros did okay on the trade. You know, they got a corner infielder who was an all-star. They got a pitcher who I think everybody's excited to run through the Astros car wash and see what he is, and he's from here. And then they got the top Cubs prospect. So I think we'd all conditioned ourselves that Tucker wasn't going to be here long term. I think that's number one. I know that's a lot of things, but collectively, that's what I think. Number two is, I think there's a lot of Astros fans who are like, he sucked in the postseason. You know, like he was a really good player for the Astros, but he was not a guy who had moments like practically every other Astro that's considered part of this golden era had in the postseason. Yeah. You know, so I think that's a lot of it. All right, 713-572-4610. If you want to weigh in, what would you do with $14 million? What was the biggest sports story of 2024? We put a lot on your plate, but if you want to text in on either of those, you can. 713-572-4610. Up next, power rank the power rankings. Oh, boy. How much damage did that Ravens loss do to the Texans in the eyes of the experts? We'll take a look at it. We'll dig into it next.